Morning. Today's daf of Kama is Kuf Yud Ches. Thank you, Lubin Foundation, for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zechon Shmuel Lubin Gabriel Bashmuel. We're starting today on Kuf Tet Zion Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud, Tana Rabbanan. If you have a caravan that's going out to the desert, and along comes a group of bandits, so the Torah fall. And they're coming to steal mechashon lefi mamon. So in terms of how that money is going to be distributed or divided, meaning that there's going to be a certain amount of money that you're going to have to pay the bandits. And so how is this going to be divided amongst the people? So lefi mamon is based on the money, meaning that somebody's carrying a lot of money, somebody's carrying a little bit of money. So in terms of a distribution, so everyone's going to have to give based on how much they have. But you don't come for nefesh. And the reason why is pretty simply is because when the bandits are coming, they're not coming to kill anybody. So therefore, you're not paying necessarily a ransom. What you're just simply paying is how much it's going to pay them off in order so that they don't take all your money. So it's going to that's going to therefore be divided based on what people are carrying with them in terms of their money. Now, if you hire a guide to take you through, so now in terms of paying him, so you pay per person. The guide is going to be navigating through treacherous area, and here the guide is basically going to be not only saving their money but saving their lives as well. So therefore, the way it's going to be divided is amongst people. Now the Gemara says, now all this is really a subject to minhag. Meaning that even though we just gave a very clear halachic statement in terms of whether you charge per person, whether you charge per financial amount that they have, but really the truth of the matter is, on issues like this, really it's a minug. And so the minug, if there's a prevailing minug, you follow the prevailing minug. Otherwise, go back to what we said earlier. So let's say there's a group of people on a caravan with donkeys. So therefore, the agreement can go like this: if anyone loses a donkey, so what we'll do is we'll chip in order to buy him a new donkey. And Bekusia, however, if the loss of the donkey is a result of the own person, the own owner's negligence, so then we don't supply him with a new donkey because he lost his donkey on the journey simply as a result of his own negligence, and therefore that's not part of the contractual agreement. We don't have to reimburse him. Shelo Bekusia, however, if it wasn't through negligence, there's ma'amidim lo. So then we'll supply with another donkey, meaning that we're all traveling together, we're all in a group, and we understand that if somebody's donkey gets taken away having nothing to do with negligence, so we'll chip in. Now let's say he says to them as follows. So he says, look, the contractual agreement is that one of them loses a donkey, so everyone's going to contribute to the reimbursement of a new donkey. How about this? You guys contribute. You guys give me the money. I'll hold the money, and but I'm still part of the group, and I'm still going to take care of everyone else's donkey. Ain't show memlo. So the Gemara says at that point in time we ignore him, meaning we're going to buy him another donkey as per the contractual agreement. Now the Gemara says pshita lo tzricha disle chamer achrina. And the Gemara says now it seems to be obvious. In other words, the last point is obvious because, of course, we want him to have another donkey. If he does not have another donkey, he's not really going to be invested to care for everybody else's because, look, I don't have a donkey, whatever. But so, in other words, so of course, if the agreement is that we're going to supply you with a new donkey, we're going to supply you with a new donkey. So, ma'u detema ha-kamintole. I'm sorry. So, ma'u detema ha-kamintole. So, the Gemara says the chish goes in the following scenario. Let's say he has more than one donkey. Let's say he has two donkeys. And one of them got lost. And again, as per the contractual agreement of the caravan, they're going to supply him with the money to buy a new donkey. So maybe he could say to them as follows, look, don't buy me another donkey. In other words, just hold the money. And you're worried that I won't be an invested party on this party? Trust me, I still have a donkey. I'm still interested in protecting. The Gemara says, in terms of his shmira, there will be a qualitative difference of his own shmira of the entire group, whether he has one donkey invested in the group or two donkeys invested in the group. So basically, the Gemara is saying is that there's a big difference between one and two. And his quality of interest in protection of the caravan will qualitatively increase when he has two donkeys. Tanu Rabbanan. More on this topic of shared liability. Svinish Aitha Malchas Bayam, so let's say the boat's on the traveling in the ocean. Amar Aleha Nachsho Latova, and along comes this big storm, and we're going to sink the boat, and we have to lighten the load. So here, kind of an obvious point, and that is that yes, we're going to lighten the load, and everyone is going to have a shared responsibility of lightening the load, and the shared responsibility is going to be shared based on weight. So in other words, if you came on board with 1,000 pounds and you came on board with 500 pounds, so everybody, we're going to need a quick accountant to come up with everybody's weight and everybody's shared responsibility, but it's per weight. It's not going to be per person, or not, it's not going to be per money. And again, the Bryce over here, same point that we made earlier, really the truth of the matter is that it's all based on custom. So really, if there's a prevailing custom, you follow the prevailing custom. Otherwise, see above. Now let's say there's a convoy of boats heading out, and the sailors are all traveling together, and they again, once again, make a pact where there's going to be a shared responsibility for any loss. So if one of the captains loses a boat, we're going to supply them with a new boat. Now, Avdala Bekosya in Mamidim, Shalom Bekosya Mamidim. Lo. And again, the Bryce over here says is that if the captain who was navigating the boat sunk the boat as a result of negligence, so then you're going to, the convoy are not going to supply him with a new boat. And if it's not as a result of negligence, so then we are going to supply him with a new boat. Now, if we go somewhere where it's uncharted and he shouldn't have gone there and he lost the boat as a result of that, so then we're not going to supply him with a new boat. Basically, another example of negligence. Now, on that point, Pshita, the Gemara says, if one of the captains decided to take his boat into uncharted area, so the Gemara says, of course we're not going to supply him with a new boat. And it seems to be obvious, and why would the Brisa need to say that? So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha debenisa mercha chad ashle v'tishrei mercha trei ashle." So the Gemara says that really, in terms of the navigation of the water, there's a difference between Nisan and Tishrei. Nisan is a spring immediately following the winter. There was a lot of rain over the winter. The level of the water is higher, and so therefore, during the spring, you can take your boat closer to shore, as opposed to Tishrei in the fall, where now the water levels are lower, and so you need to move your boat further away from shore. The kaza b'yuma nisan l'makam Tishrei. Now, what happened is that during Nisan, he went to the place that he normally goes during Tishrei. So Ma'ud Tema Davsha Nakivazel. So the Gemara says, look, it's not uncharted, it's just that he chose the wrong season to go down this path. And you can make the argument, well, that's not negligence, that's just simply habit. So the Gemara says that's the argument you could have made. Kamashman, the Chiddush is no, it's negligence. Meaning that you, the captain, should know that yes, you can go down this path, but only during certain seasons. And you chose the wrong season to go down that path, and as a result of that, you damaged the boat. So if there's a contracted agreement amongst this convoy, you are considered, you are deemed negligent. Tanur Rabbanan, we'll do one more of these before we get to the next sugya. Hashayar Shaisa Malchus Ben Midbar Va'amad Gais V'Tarfa. So you have a caravan that's going through the desert, and along comes a bandit and is Tarif and takes. Va'amad Echaman V'Hitzil. And one of the people stand up against the bandits, and he basically saves everybody's money. So, Hitzil La'emtsa. So in terms of whose money he saved, so everybody, meaning that he did not assume ownership of it just because he saved it. However, if he stands up and he says, yes, I'll save, but for me, so then he still lots more. So then he saves for himself. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Hechidami. We need context over here. Gemara says, really over here, the fundamental issue should be whether or not the people have given up hope of getting back their possessions. So in other words, if this group of bandits are the type of group where nobody can stand up against them, so then everything is hefker, and then if somebody happens to get it afterwards, so they're going to own it. And if we can all stand up to this group of bandits, it's just now a question of who's going to do it, but if somebody could stand up to the group of bandits, so it's not hefker. So the Gemara says, so what difference does it make whether the one person makes a declaration, I'm saving it, either he makes no declaration, or he makes a declaration. His declaration should not be the fundamental issue. It's the issue should be hefker. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is going to give now three suggestions. Amar Amichama, number one. So over here, we're not just talking about a group, we're talking about a partnership. So they had shared interest, literally shared interest in whatever they were transporting. And now the question is as follows: can I force a partnership to dissolve? I am a partner, and can I withdraw the partnership? Can I dissolve the partnership even without the consent of the other partners? Okay, an issue that comes up a couple times in the Gemara, and the Gemara here is discussing this very issue. Shutav cholek shelo ladas chaveru. Amar palig, lo amar lo palig, and the Gemara says basically yes, a partner can dissolve the partnership if he states so. So over here we're talking about a partnership, and now along comes a group of bandits, and so basically if you make the declaration and you say okay, I'm dissolving the partnership right now, so I know this is no longer a group. Everybody now is a sole proprietor over their shares. Okay, now the bandit comes. Now everybody's on their own. And so if the bandit comes and you're now standing up and protecting and saving everyone else, and it's something that nobody else could have done, so then I'm going to acquire them all. That is answer number one. That's Rami Barchama. Rav Amar Hacha BePoal and Askin. Rav says that the person who's doing the saving is an employee. Now, an employee, whenever he does something, he's doing something on behalf of his employer. Can an employee basically say, I'm now unemployed? And we're going to learn in just a moment, the answer is, sure he can. Now, we're not talking about a contractor, somebody who's contracted labor. We're talking about somebody who's getting paid by the day. Somebody's getting paid by the day, in the middle of the day, can say, okay, I'm done. And uchirav damarav po yachul achzer bo afilu b'chatei hayom. Okay, statement we're going to see in Bab Mesia a couple of times, the statement to Rav, and that is that if you're a hired employee, so even though you contracted to work for the day, so you could stop in the middle of the day. Now we understand. So when the employee stands up against the bandit, so if he remains an employee, he's working on behalf of his employer. If he decides that I am now independent, I declare myself unemployed, so now he saves it for himself. Now once he retracts from his employment, so the Gemara describes as time achrina. He's like a new, it's like a new entity. Meaning, he's basically himself now. Because as far as servitude is concerned, so we are slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Good, and that's what we want to be. But in terms of working and enslavement to other people, no. In other words, the whole idea of being an employee and not being a slave is, I can terminate employment anytime I want. That's the definition of somebody who's free. Rav Ashi Amar, this is now our third answer, and that's Kishiyachal Asi Ali Deitchak. So the Gemara says, yes, somebody can stand up to the bandits, but it's not going to be easy. So now, Gali Daite Latsmolo, Gali Daite Lemsa. So now you stand up to the bandits. This is not going to be easy. So now, if you make the declaration and say, look, I'm doing it, and quite frankly, it's going to be very hard, and no one else is stepping up to the plate. So once I say, I'm going to acquire everything for myself, so the Gemara says, so then you can assume Efkeris. If, however, you stand up to the guard, but you make no declaration, and it could have been done by others, again, with a lot of difficulty, so it's still going to remain everybody's property. Okay, so in the course of this Amud of Gemara, we discussed various shared responsibilities: traveling in a caravan, going on a boat, taking a trip through the desert, okay, and various issues of shared responsibility and agreements amongst the participants of the journey, and what kind of shared liability they're going to have. We start with the next Mishnah. Right. So if the person had,
in this case, if he has Yerush, the rest of the people have Yerush, and then they found that he's saving it, come back.
Okay, right. It's a good question. Certainly sounds like from the Gemara is that once they give up on the item no longer becomes theirs. Okay, it's its own separate discussion, but yeah, that's certainly what it seems like from the Gemara. So you steal land from your friend, and along comes extortionists, and the extortionists come and take the land from you. Now, if this is pervasive, meaning that basically extortionists are taking everybody's land, So even though you stole somebody's property, and even though while you were quote unquote the owner of that property, you were never the owner of that property, but while in quote unquote you at least assumed ownership of that property, so it was taken away from you, and it's pervasive, it's happening everywhere, so then you just simply say to the owner, look, I'm sorry and I'm sorry. Okay, two apologies. Apology number one, I know I shouldn't have kicked you off your land. And apology number two, and look, and while I was quote unquote the assumed owner, somebody come and took it from me, look, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry twice. And the double apology, I'm embellishing with the double apology, but with this double apology, you also are not financially on the hook, because the truth of the matter is it's pervasive, and even if this would have remained by the original owner, probably would have happened anyway. However, let's say the extortionist comes and takes the land only because they see the Gazlan as the presumed owner of the land. Oh, really? Oh, the president, that's the Gazlan's land? And so he took advantage, the extortionist took advantage of this particular situation. Now the Gazlan's apology is not going to help financially, because now the Gazlan's going to turn back to the owner and say, look, I'm really sorry. Now, wait a second. If I would have been on the land, this wouldn't have happened. The fact that you kicked me off and assumed ownership, and now the land was taken away from you, you're now going to be financially on the hook. We start with the Gemara, and here begins an important discussion and one of the highlights of the 10th parak of Baba Kama. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Man D'Tani Masikin LaMishtabesh Man D'Tani Masikin LaMishtabesh. First of all, a linguistic discussion, and that is the word that our Mishnah uses to describe extortionists. Some have the word Masikin, some have the word Matzikin, but the Gemara says either one of them is acceptable linguistically. Man D'Tani Masikin LaMishtabesh D'Chsiv. We go back to last week's parsha, b'matzor v'matzok, in the long tochecha, one of the words that's used is a matzok. Matzok means to oppress. And once again, we go back to last week's parsha and the tochecha. Yeresh etzalatzal metargaminan. Now here it doesn't come straight out of the chumash. It is a description of the locust coming and eating. And if you look at targum over there, yechasnena saka'a. So you see the word saka from the same word as masikin, which means that the locusts are going to come and eat and oppress and extort. Okay, so either words would be acceptable. I'm machmas agazlan chayv. Hechidami. We are now looking at the case in the Mishnah. What exactly is the case in the Mishnah where the extortionist comes and takes the land away from the gazlan? So ilay medansu ala aradi develo ansu kule arasa. So the Gemara says, well, are we talking about a case where the extortionist is coming just because the gazlan took over the land? So the Gemara says, Amirisha shamas mina. The truth of the matter is that even before we got to the Seifa, this point was a clear inference from the ratio of the Mishnah. Because look at the ratio of the Mishnah. Imakas Medina hi. The ratio of the Mishnah says, if this is pervasive, so then the Gazlan says to the owner, sorry. And then, by very clear inference, ilo lo. Meaning, and if it's not pervasive, then the Gazlan cannot apologize to the owner and has to financially pay. So we already know from the ratio that that if the extortionist is coming just for the Gazlan, just after the Gazlan, so then Gazlan has to reimburse. So it must be that the second half of the Mishnah is describing the following scenario. The Gazlan never took the land, but here's what the Gazlan did. Gazlan saw the extortionist coming. Gazlan said to the extortionist, hey, come with me. I'll show you property. Okay? Right? And he claims it's his. But in other words, under those circumstances, even though the Gazlan never pushed off the owner off the land, and all he did was just show the extortionist where to get land, for that he's going to be financially liable. Lishna Achrina, the Gemara says it slightly differently. Hachba Maiskinan, Kigon Dansua Akum, V'Amrle, where along comes the non-Jews, and they are basically pushing, they're oppressing an individual, and he says to them, come, let me show you. Achvui Adaite V'Achvui Ha'ba'adayu. So I'll show you some lands, and he shows his lands, and he shows the other person's land along. Basically, what we would call this in halacha is moser. Somebody who hands over Jewish money to non-Jews, that is what's called the moser. The Gemara says that is what our Mishnah is describing. Okay. We are now, from this point going forward, for the for almost the entirety of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph and Amud Beis, are going to go story after story, where basically we see Moser, somebody handing Jewish money over to non-Jews, and financial repercussions, and as we will see later on, even more than financial repercussions. Stay tuned. A certain person showed the stores of wheat that was owned by the Reish Galusa to a non-Jew, and the non-Jews took it. Also come to Rav Nachman, they go to Rav Nachman, Chayvei Rav Nachman L'Shlomei, and Rav Nachman says, you are liable to pay. Even though, now keep in mind, this is going to be one of the overarching themes of this entire discussion. And that is that the Moser did not do anything. Generally speaking, in the world of Nezikin, we're now at the end of Baba Kama. We know, in order to be Chayv Nezik, you have to physically damage somebody else's property. Here, all you do is just simply show the non-Jew where to go to get the property. So this is not Nezik B'Yadayim. This is what's called Gurama. You're only causing loss to somebody else. And that's why throughout our discussion, we're going to see the Chiddush really is that whenever any Amora or Tana, but mostly Amoraim, are going to say Chayav, it must be predicated on the fact that even though it's Grama, you're still going to be Chayav. So Chayav Rav Nachman Shlomei, so Rav Nachman says you're Chayav to pay Yosef, Rav Yosef Achor de Rav Huna, Barachi of Yosef, Rav Huna Barachi Akamei de Rav Nachman. So now Amoraim are sitting in front of Rav Nachman, Amalei Rav Huna Barachi of Rav Nachman, Dino Kunasa. Now, when you impose this, was this the law or was it a fine? Meaning, under what category are you saying he's obligated to pay? Is this the letter of the law or was it punitive? Now Amalei Masis, and he did not see, he says, what do you mean? It's a Mishnah. Look at the Mishnah we just learned together, where if the extortionist comes as a result of the Gazlan, and we explain the Mishnah to mean that the Gazlan just simply showed the non-Jew where to go, and yet the Mishnah says liability. Certainly sounds like from the Mishnah it's din. So then after Rav Nachman leaves, Rav Yosef turns to Rav Huna and says, look, it's a great, great question, but so what? Who cares? Meaning, it's din, it's knas, right? He's got to pay. What category we put it under? So the Gemara says, idina knasa. What difference does it make? So Amar lay top of kufi yizayin amalav idina gamrina minei knasa lo gamrina minei. So he says, what do you mean? What difference does it make? It makes a huge difference. If it's din, it creates a precedent. If it is knas, there is no precedent to create over here. And Rashi over here writes second line of Rashi. I knasa hu dekansa Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman gave a punitive fine to this person. Look at the next words of Rashi. Mishum deragol haya bekach. Because this person was incorrigible. He kept doing it again and again. He was a repeat offender. And Rav Nachman basically had it with this person. And enough. So basically, under those circumstances, it was a meta halachic ruling of Rav Nachman, basically because he just simply had it up to here with this guy, which means then that you cannot use this as a case study to establish precedent for other areas in halacha. And the Gemara says, and by the way, how do I know that I cannot learn it from Knas to Tanya? Because let's go back to the fifth parak of Gittin. In other words, basically when we're talking about Grama, so the fifth parak of Gittin is one of the places to go, as is our Gemara right here. Right, when the Chachamim imposed a fine, when you do damage to somebody that is not physically noticeable, so you go to his produce and your metame, or you go to his wine and you create nesach, there is no physical change. The change that happens is a simple halachic change. And so therefore, according to the strict letter of the law, you are not financially liable. And therefore, the Chachamim said, you're going to therefore be liable. And then they added to that midameya. Midameya is when I take a Kohen's truma and I mix it together with chulin. Now that I mix it together with chulin, so now, all the chulin that gets mixed, it doesn't have to be the Kohen's truma, I take it back. It's just regular truma. And I mix it together with chulin, so there, unless you have a 1-to-100 ratio, there is not going to be bittul. The resulting mixture is called dimua, and you, basically the owner has now lost it. It can only be given to the Kohen, and it's sold to the Kohen on the cheap. So it creates a loss. So again, but the difference is not noticeable. It's a halachic damage, not a physical damage. So the chazur in lo, chazur lo. Now they added midameya to the list. So my time la mishum de kanasu ve kanasu lo gamrina minei. And why? Meaning because even though they already established liability in cases of midameya menasech, but that's kanas. And I can't establish precedent from Kenas. Every case has to be treated on its own. So the Gemara says, "Lo mikaver saver lafsim, ruba chashu lafsim, or lo chashu, or levesof saver lafsim, or nami chashashu." The Gemara says, "No, you misunderstood that Mishnah. That Mishnah was not because Kenas and we can't establish precedent. The Mishnah was, look, in case of metame, in case of menasech, you're creating total loss. In the case of dimua, you're not creating total loss. You're creating partial loss. So I might have thought that I can't extend from metame menasech to the case of medameh." The Gemara says, "Ini, but now it's not really true." V'atani avur de Rabbi Avin. Brishana you omre metame v'ham medameh. Now, according to another brisa, metame and medameh were the first ones where the chachamim assigned liability, and then chazru lomer afa menasech, and then menasech was added afterwards. Chazrin lo chazru lo my time. Now, according to this version, what's the menasech being added? Meaning, previously we had a wonderful explanation of why metame and why menasech and medame was only added afterwards. But over here, I don't understand. So la mishum de longam and mekanasa. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to go back to what we originally proposed. Each one of them is a kanas, and I can't establish precedent one to the other. Gemara says, again, I can give a different explanation. Lo, mikar savri karabi avin lo sof savri karabi yirmiya. The Gemara says, over here, what we originally thought and what we concluded is predicated on a debate that we saw back in Ksuvos in the third parak. And it goes like this. Mikar savri karabi avin dam rabi avin zarechet mitchilas arba lo sof arba vikari shirayim b'hailei chasau. On Shabbos, I take an arrow and I throw it for Amos in the Rosh Hasharabim. That is a violation of Shabbos capital crime. And while it was traveling from point A to point B, so it tore clothing in the middle. So now, Chiyuv Misa and Chiyuv Mamon happening concurrently. And so therefore, Kimle B'drabe Minei, Pato Sharei Kira Tzorech Anachahi, Omechai B'Nafsho. And even though the Chilul Shabbos started with the Akira, but only ends at the Hanacha, I nevertheless view the entire act as one unit, and any financial damage that happens in the middle is going to be considered simultaneous with the Chilul Shabbos. That's what we originally thought. And then, Ulvasov Savri Kerav Yirmi, Adam Rav Yirmi, Amishas Agbah, Kanye, Ichayv Leimam, Amechayv Nafshalo, Havi Ad Shas Nisach. But then they said, no, wait one second. Our case, we're talking about Nisach. Now, Nisuch creating libation with the wine of a non-Jew, I'm sorry, creating libation with wine is a capital crime, meaning it's a avodah zarah. So now if I take somebody else's wine and I do a avodah zarah with that wine, plus I also ruin the wine of that individual, so don't we have now simultaneous Misa and Mamon, to which now the Gemara is saying, no, we don't. And why don't we? We don't because the moment I pick it up to take it, that's the theft. That's the financial liability. The Nisach will only come happen later. That's the Misa. Now we have separated the two actions. They are not simultaneous. And that's why the Menasech was not originally included in the list. Because they are not occurring concurrently. And that's why it wasn't included in the list. And therefore, a separate institution, rabbinic institution, was therefore needed to include it back in the list. Okay, let's continue in the Gemara. Rav Huna bar Yehuda ikla lebei avyune. Rav Huna bar Yehuda went to a town. Now, after coming home, he sits down with Rava. Let's go. Tell me what happened. Amalei Yisrael shansu of de kochavim. So there was a Jew who was forced, coerced by a non-Jew, and what he did to basically get the non-Jew off his back is he showed him the money of some other Jew. Again, there was a guy involved in being Moser. So Bali Liadiv Chayavtiv. So the matter came to me, and I said, "He's chayav." Amalei ahadur uvdalamare. So Rava says to him, "You go back to that town and you reverse your decision. You were wrong. Why?" The time you saw shansu of the kochavim v'haramam chaver pater. if we're talking about where the Jew was not just a Moser, but he was pressured in doing so. Now, to what degree of pressure? So, not perfectly clear. But it seems like Sakana. In other words, it seems like we're talking about his life was on the line. And in terms of saving himself, he showed other people's money, so then he's going to be Pater. Then he will be not financially liable. However, if he picks up his friend's property in order to save himself, so then he would be liable. So, Amar Rabbi, Mahar Rabbi Atzma, Kenasam Nasam Biyad Dami. Now, Rabbi says that if he showed other people's property without the coercion, so that's as if it's Ki'ilu, like you pick up the money and you hand it to the non-Jew and you're going to be liable. Next story. How Gavar Dansu of the Kocham Vachve Ach Chamra de Rav Mari, Berei de Rav Pinchas, Berei de Rav Chista. So a certain individual was being forced by a non-Jew, and in order to save himself, he showed the wine of another Amara. Amar Lei, Dari Vamati Bahadan. So then the non-Jew says, okay, you're going to pick it up and you're going to come with us. So he picked it up and he went along with the non-Jew. Also come to Rav Ashi Patrane. So they went to Rav Ashi for a ruling. Is this person going to be financially liable? Amar le Rabban le Rav Ashi v'atanya. I'm sorry. And Rav Ashi's response is that he's exempt. So Amar le Rabban le Rav Ashi v'atanya m'nasim v'nasim b'yad chayev. What do you mean? Didn't we just learn together in the Braisa? Is that if the Jew were to pick up somebody else's money to hand it to the non-Jew, so then he's going to be chayiv. And isn't that what happened over here? The Gemara says, no, that's only when he did so unsolicited by the non-Jew. But when the non-Jew starts with the pressure and puts this person's life on the line, and now shows them other people's money, and even if he were to pick it up, at that point in time, it's as if the property has already been consumed. In other words, it's already been destroyed, lost, and therefore, even though the Jew were to actually pick up other people's property, he's still not going to be chayev. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa, which seems to be a difficulty. The Braisa says, Hoshilo piki amir zeh. Oh, eshkol anavim zeh, vahoshilo chayev. When the non-Jew says to the Jew, you're going to pick that up, you're going to hand it to me. Right, either a ball of wool or a cluster of grapes, and the Jew does it, and it's not his own property, it's somebody else's property, so he's going to be liable. So the Gemara says, "Hachamaymiskin dekai betray avre denahare." So the Gemara says, "You misunderstood. This particular case was where they are, where the non-Jew was on one side and the Jew was on the other side, and the and now that they were on two sides of the river, as Rashi points out over here, the Jew can just simply say to the non-Jew, I'll see you later, meaning I'm not going to do what you're going to ask. And he had an opportunity to run away. And the wording of the Braisa indicates that they were on two sides of the river, because Hoshi basically means stretch out and pass it to me. How Shas or Shusa, the Gemara tells another story. There was a trap to Avamanatse Allah Betray. Two people were fighting over the trap, meaning that there was a trap laid out, animals were captured, and now a question of who does this animal belong to? Two people were fighting over the content of the trap. Hi, Amar Didihu, Vai Amar Didihu. Each one is claiming it belongs to them. Azo Chaminau Masole Parhagna Demalka. So one of them reports the animal over to the non-Jewish authority. In other words, he was a Moser. Amar Abaye Choloma Anaki Masri Didi Masri. So Abaye says, okay, but look, he was a litigant in this case. Can't he make the argument, what I gave to the non-Jew belongs to me? Amalei Rava, Chol Kamine Rava says, no. They're in litigation over the contents of the trap. You cannot claim something that belongs to you when it is in litigation. Ela Amar Rava Mishamtin Le'adam Aysa Le'vikai Bedina. So Rava says, no, this person, what he did was wrong. Put him in Cherem and continue to keep him in Cherem until he brings back the item or pays for the item or comes to court for the purposes of litigation. Okay, next. Okay, here's one of the most popular stories that is told in the 10th parak of Baba Kama. Certainly spend the rest of today on this story. It will take us almost an entire amud to get through this story. So there was a person who wanted to show the straw of his friend to a non-Jew. So in other words, he was very clear that he wanted to become a Moser. Gemara doesn't give us the background information why. Okay. Also the Kamed Rav. So he goes in front of Rav, Amarle lo tachve velo tachve. So Rav says, under no circumstances are you allowed to do that. You cannot show the money of your friend to a non-Jewish authority. You will become a Moser if you do that. So Amarle mechavino mechavina. So the guy says to Rav, I don't care what your opinion is, I'm going to do that. So Yasser Rav Kahana came to Rav. So Rav Kahana was sitting there in front of Rav, and Rav Kahana took the law physically into his own hands. Shamte lekuyi mene. And what he did is he took the guy's neck and he dislocated the neck, he killed the guy. So Kari Rav Ilave. Now Rav's reaction to this, Banecha ufushach vuberosh kochutzos ketomim chmar, quotes the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. The Pasuk concludes by saying, we are like a wild ox in a net. And Rav then goes on to explain the Pasuk in Yeshayahu. Matoze kevin shenafa. Once the wild ox is in the net, there is no rachmanis on the wild ox. When money of a Jew falls into the hand of a non-Jew, the non-Jew will have no rachmanis, no compassion. And not only is the money going to be in question, the Jew then ultimately is going to be in a precarious state as well. And it certainly sounds like from Rav's reaction that what Rav Kahana did was appropriate, was correct. Okay, for more on this topic, I'm not going to go through it right now, but right, I'll send you to the right place. For more on this topic, so go to the Rambam. And in terms of Amara Makom, where in the Rambam to look, so you'll look in Hilchos Chov HaMazik, you'll look over there in the 8th parak of Chov HaMazik, where you can follow up on how the Rambam feels about this. Amle Rav Kahana Ada Idna Ava Parsai Delo Kaptia Shvichos Damim. So now Rav says to Rav Kahana, okay, the repercussions. Meaning, okay, what you did was appropriate, but now we have the government that we have to deal with. Now previously we had the Persians, and quite frankly, Rav says to Rav Kahana, they didn't care. They didn't mind so much. Okay. Va'ashika Yavane. But now we have the Yavanim. The Kaptu Ashvichos Damim. Okay, now again, Greeks, it certainly sounds historically like we're a little bit backwards, but okay, and I know there are other the gears is flipped over here. Previously Yavanim, now Persians. Either way, the local governmental officials, so right, they're not going to be happy. So the Amri Maradin Maradin, and they're going to say that you're rebellious. Kum sak la'aretz Yisrael v'kabalach. I'm sorry, kum sak la'aretz Yisrael. So Rav says to Rav Kahana, okay, extradite yourself, and run to Eretz Yisrael. And lay low in Eretz Yisrael. And okay, so now Rav Kahana is in exile. I know it's ironic, right? Exile to Eretz Yisrael. But he's in exile now over the fact that he killed somebody. Now Rav says to Rav Kahana, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to sit in Shir by Rav Yochanan. But here's what you're taking upon yourself. For the next 7 years, you are not, excuse me, opening your mouth in Shir. You're going to keep your mouth shut. So, Azo Ashkech L'Resh Lakish Yasuf Kamesai Mesifta Diyuma L'Rabbanan. Now, he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's sitting in the shir with Resh Lakish. Resh Lakish is like giving the Chazara shir of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan gave shir, and Resh Lakish went over it with the Talmidim. Amalu Resh Lakish, Hecha Amrule, Amai Amalu Hai, Kusha Vahai Kusha, Vahai Peruka Vahai Peruka. And in a simple dialogue between Resh Lakish and Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says, you know, you can ask this question, but you can give this answer. And you can ask this question, and you can give this answer. And Rav Kahana, a simple demonstration of, right, I know how to learn. So, Amrle L'Resh Lakish, also Amrle L'Resh Lakish, also Resh Lakish, Amrle L'Rav Yochanan. So Resh Lakish now reports back to Rav Yochanan, and he says, Ari Alami Bavel. So there's a lion came in from Bavel, meaning there's a new student in Shir, and he's a lion, and lion marbe mesifta delamachar. Basically, Resh Lakish says to Rav Yochanan, I know you put a lot of preparation into shir, but tomorrow, extra preparation in shir before you give shir in front of this man who comes in from Bavel. Lamachar usfei bedarakama. So the next day, they took Rav Kahana and they put him in the first row. But remember his promise that he made to Rav, that he wasn't going to open his mouth. So bedarakama kame to Rav Yochanan. Amar shmaita v'lo ikshe. Shmaita v'lo ikshe. So every time Rav Yochanan said something, Rav Kahana had nothing to say, but he couldn't say anything. and then anach ve'achori sheva darei. And every time he was quiet, they basically moved him back a row, ados ribadar basra. And they moved him all the way back to the back row because you have no business being in the front row in shir. Please don't ask me where I sat in shir back in my days in yeshiva. And now I'm embarrassed to tell you. So Amalei Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish Arisha Amarta Nasa Shu'al. So he says this line is really just but a fox, meaning overhyped. Amri Yehi Rava Dani Sheva Dari LaHavachilu Sheva Shinen Amalei Rav. And so Rav Kahana says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let it be that the embarrassment that I suffered, having been moved back 7 rows, should be in exchange for the 7 years in which I told Rav I would not speak. Okay, I don't know how that exchange rate works, but that's what Rav Kahana said. Kama Kari Amarlei Nahadam Abresha. So then after that, he says to Rav Yochanan, let's go over the shear again. And you know what's going to happen. So now Rav Yochanan goes over the shear, and at every point that Rav Yochanan says something, so Rav Kahana has a question to ask. Ukme bedarakame, to the point where now Rav Kahana has been moved back to the front row. And he still has questions against Rav Yochanan on the positions of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan aviyase v'sheva bistarke. So, and Rav Yochanan was elevated sitting on 7 rugs. Shafalei chad betaske mitusei. So amar shmaita vikshele ad shafalei kula bistarke mitusei. And with every now question that asks, because Rav Kahana can't move any more forward in shir, so another rug has been removed from Rav Yochanan. Ad yasiv al ar, to the point where Rav Yochanan now is on level ground together with Rav Kahana. Rav Yochanan gavisaba have. Now Rav Yochanan at this point in time was an older man, and misarche gavina, and his eyebrows were so long that they were basically hanging over his eyes. He did not see Rav Kahana. Amlu dalalei navachzei dalalei bechala dekaspa, and his eyebrows were removed with a silver instrument. Chazat the partisif sasei. Now Rav Kahana had a split lip, and so it looked as if that Rav Kahana was kind of smirking at Rav Yochanan. Savar achucha kamachech bei. So that's what Rav Yochanan thought he saw Rav Kahana doing. Chalish daite. So Rav Yochanan experienced chalishas das, and nach nafshe, and Rav Kahana as a result of that dies. It's as if he got the ayin hara from Rav Yochanan. Lamach amalu Rav Yochanan Rabbanan. Now the next day Rav Yochanan says to the rabbis, chazitzala blavlai heichi avid. You see that Babylonian, and see what he did to me. He was smirking at me. He was making fun of me. Amar lei darchi hachi. And the students explained to Rav Yochanan, you misunderstood. That wasn't a smirk. That was just simply the way he normally looks. Alagabe marasa. So at that point in time, now Rav Yochanan is looking for forgiveness from Rav Kahana, but one small detail, Rav Kahana's dead. So Rav Yochanan goes to the cave of Rav Kahana, where he was buried. Chazadahu hadra le achna. So, at the mouth of the cave, as Rav Yochanan's trying to make entrance into the cave, there's a snake that is coiled around where the tail of the snake is in the mouth of the snake, basically not allowing Rav Yochanan entrance into the cave. So he says to the snake, open up so that the Rebbe can go visit his Talmud. And then Rav Yochanan understands that he misjudged the kind of relationship they have. It's not a Rebbe towards a Talmud, it's a colleague. But the snake still didn't open up the mouth. Yachnes Talmud Eitzol HaRav. And finally Rav Yochanan says, let the student come and visit his Rebbe. Now Rav Yochanan understands the relationship that they had. Pasach le'bayrachme v'ukme. Now he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Rachmanus and Tchiyas HaMesim. Rav Kahana was revived. Amalei Yavi Yadana D'Darcha D'Amar Hachi Lo Chalsha Daiti. And now the apology. Had I known that this is the way you always look, I would not have experienced Chalisha's Das and you would not have died. Hasha Le'simar Bahadan. Come back together with me to yeshiva. If you can promise me that I will never experience death again, so then I will come. But if you can't make that promise, I'm not coming back with you. And since the time has passed, it has passed. Tyrei, he woke him up, meaning Rav Yochanan woke up Rav Kahana, Ukme, and he stood him up. Shali kosfeka dehavalei upashtinu. Everything that was a suffix to Rav Yochanan, he asked Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana resolved the suffix. Nihale hainu dam Rav Yochanan dechon ame dilhonui. And Rav Yochanan came to the following realization. I thought the Torah belonged to us. We live in Eretz Yisrael. We have a direct transmission of Masorah from Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, right, from all the Tanaim in Eretz Yisrael. So I thought the Torah belonged here. And I thought we had the best version of the Masorah. But now I realize, Dilhoni, it really belongs to them. Meaning they in Bavel have exceeded us. They have surpassed us. Okay. Much to discuss over here, including whether or not Rav Kahana actually was revived, meaning was this a temporary discussion that they had, or did Rav Kahana actually ultimately experience some form of Tchias HaMeisim? See Rashi for more discussion on this. We're going to go on. Ha'uda Achve. Oh, yes, you're going to ask me a question on this. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Judgment without warning, first of all.
Yeah.
It was just an intent.
Right. Okay, those are excellent questions. Again, see the Rambam, eighth parak of Chovel HaMazik, and you'll see how the Rambam frames this discussion. So there was a person who showed silk of Rabbi Abba, Yosef Rabbi of Rabbi Abba, meaning basically he was a moser. Okay, and Yasser Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Chinna, Bar Papi, Rabbi Yisrael, Nafcha, Yasser Rabbi Lai, Gabai, Usava, Lichayuve. Mehad did not. Now, he showed off somebody else's property to the non-Jews. He's liable. Now, we know this based on the following Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, Danas Adin Zichet, Zachayv, Chayv, Zazakai, Timah, Zatara, Tara, Zatime, Mashas, Asa, Vishalem, Mi, Beso. Should sound familiar. We did this a couple of weeks ago. When a judge comes up with an erroneous ruling, the judge, even though the damage that he caused is grama, he didn't physically damage somebody, it was a result of his ruling, nevertheless, the judge, if it was clear negligence on the part of the judge in terms of how incorrect he was, he will be liable. So the Gemara says, so what do you see? Grama is going to be chayev. So Amalei, Ravi Lai, Hachi Amarav, Vahusha Nasav Nasam. Yeah, no, remember when we saw this Mishnah a couple weeks ago, we said and we're saying it again, that case is where the judge physically picks up the item and hands it from one litigant to the other litigant. Amalei Zola Gabi Rav Shuma Melayakam Rav Lazar Ben Pedas the Dina Dina Degarmi. You want adjudication and you want to be awarded the loss, go to these Amarayim, they judge such cases of what's called Dina Degarmi. Again, its own separate discussion of Garmi, is it Garama, or is it something a little bit close to Nezek B'Yadayim? And they went to the judges, and the judges says, you're liable. And how do I know that? Because the Mishnah that started off our entire discussion this morning, and that was that if you show off somebody else's property, you're going to be liable for that damage. There was a person who was entrusted as a custodian to watch a silver cup. And along come Ganavim. And what he did is he took the silver cup and he says, here, take it. Also coming to Rabbi Darabba Patre, Narabba says, you are going to be exempt. Exemption, he saved himself using somebody else's property. So you don't have an exemption. The Gemara says, wait. If this person is wealthy, and the Ganavim would have come into his house anyway, so then you cannot show other people's money to save yourself and to save your own money. And therefore, he's going to be liable. But if the robbers came in specifically for the silver cup, so then he can hand it over and it will not be financially liable. They came in specifically for that purpose. The person was entrusted to watch money, and the money was earmarked for ransom, which is a subcategory of the mitzvah of tzedakah. And so the ganavim come in and he says, okay, right, you're what? You're ganavim in my house? Here, take this money. Now, also coming to Rava Patre. Now Rava says, Pater, he's not going to be liable. What do you mean? He saved himself with other people's money. What do you mean? The money was earmarked to save people from who is held captivity. This is that. Meaning, basically he was held hostage by the Ganavim. He saved himself with that money. There was a particular person who who pushed his donkey onto the ferry before people got onto the ferry. Now, Bailat Buye. So now, too much weight on the boat. They took the donkey, threw it right overboard. So the donkey drowned. But now the owner of the donkey said, I want reimbursement from the guy who threw my donkey over the boat. So Patre, so Rabbi says, you're not going to get reimbursement from me, and I'm ruling that the owner of the donkey is not going to be liable to pay. So once again, Abai says, I don't understand. He saved himself using other people's money. That demands a reimbursement. No. The guy who pushed his donkey on the boat, he's a rodef. He put everyone on the boat in a precarious situation, and therefore he's judged as a rodef. And Rabba Latame, and let's go over the basic rules. The Amaraba. The rodef himself, who damages any kalim, he's going to be potter because of the rule of Kimle Bidarabimine. Shayim is Chai Benasha. Vinirdaf, Shishibra is a kalim shal rodef, potter. Now, in terms of the victim himself, if he breaks kalim of the rodef, he's going to be potter. But if he uses anybody else's money to save himself, good, but you have to pay. Chayav, you're obligated to pay. Because you can't save yourself using other people's money without reimbursing the other person. Now, a third party who gets involved and is trying to save the nirdaf, he is going to have a total exemption from any and all damage. Volomina din. Now, in terms of the third party, so that's not the strict letter of the law. It's to incentivize a third party to get involved. Because if the third party is going to get involved, but only so that he'll be exempt, so then obviously he will not do it and he will not get involved. Okay. Let's do a little bit more for this morning. Shatfa nahar omer la harisha chalafanecha. I steal somebody's land, and along comes a flood and drowns it. So I say to him, here's your land. Sorry. Tan rabbanan hagoz lo sada mechaver v'shatfa nahar chayv lami lo stay acher. Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, there is theft by karka. I know that's unusual. That is the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. V'chachamim omer la harisha chalafanecha. And the chachamim say, no, there's no theft when it comes to land. B'maika mifligi Rabbi Elazar darash ribu miyuta v'kichesh b'amit. And how the argument over here plays out, says the Gemara, is how to darshan the pasuk. Rabbi Elazar darshan's using a ribu and a miut. My rabbi, kol mile. Theft can include everything. Oh, my miut miut shtaros. And the only thing excluded is the shtar, because the shtar is immovable, and a shtar does not have intrinsic value. V'rabbanan darshan kol prato v'kichesh kol v'pikadam pradim omi kol chazav v'klal. And the way the Chachamim Darshan the Pasuk is using the methodology of Klal Uprat. So, carcass excluded because it's not a movable item. Eved is connected to karka. And Yatsushar Shafa Pisha Metaltalin and Gufa Mamun. And Ishtar is excluded because Ishtar is not money in of itself. The Gemara quotes a brisa, and in this brisa is a argument over a cow. Now, a cow should be not up for debate. It's a movable and it has intrinsic value. Why are they debating the cow? What happened was the person stole a property and there was a cow squatting on the property. So, vishat fanahar, and now along comes a flood. Now, and now basically in this context, the cow now is viewed part and parcel. I say that literally, part and parcel of the property. And so now everyone is consistent with their position. Since Rabbi Elazar says that there is theft by property, there's also going to be theft by said cow. According to the Chachamim, since there is no theft by property, there therefore is not going to be theft by said cow. Ad Khan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up in the Mishnah.